All right, you ready to rock this?
Yeah, let's do this.
What episode are we on now?
274. I literally don't know. I'm going to guess five.
It's 274, 75. It's close.
Yeah, I could check on that, but that would require actual looking at things.
Yeah, it doesn't mean that this isn't very, very important.
Yeah, it's the most important thing we do here at the Front Side is bring these auditory experiences to people. And ping pong, which I don't know if you can hopefully you can hear it in the background because it's pretty much a bedrock cultural value here.
Mm-hmm.
I showed up my first day at the Front Side and I was like, wow, the only thing in our main area is a ping pong table. So clearly, like, this is like, you know, some places you go in and I think a ping pong table is like a cultural smell. Like,
yeah, you were actually very wary of the ping pong table at first.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, this is a red flag. Like, this, I don't know.
Okay,
I don't know about
this. Here's what you look for. Like, a ping pong table is a red flag. Free lunch, red flag.
Nerf
like
guns.
Arcade cabinets, Nerf guns. And it turns out we pretty much have, so Nerf guns, video games, ping pong table. Like, every red flag that I would say, hey, you're probably in a startup that's going to eat you alive and spit you out and expect you to live at the office. Those have all made their way in and wire themselves into our culture here somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I even noticed the speakers are back.
giant homemade speakers.
Yeah, those are going to have to go back in the thing. We're just going to have to go ahead and spring.
They're bumping, though.
And put them in the wall. I know. That's
They look like if you were to put those in the back, they would not be out of place in the back of a pickup truck at like a SEMA show where people are there to just show off their massive audio equipment. So, all of the things, but it's okay in my opinion because it's organic, right? Like, mm-hmm. These are things that kind of like, you know, came out. Anyway, that's a little bit of a sidebar, but
yeah.
So episode, I want to say five. Six. Could be six. So, but
plus
I'm so glad. Yeah,
welcome.
I'm so glad we're back.
Welcome, everybody.
Yes. So that's our first sidetrack and rat hole into corporate culture, which we will now tie that up neatly.
All right.
With our lives.
Well, what should we...
Lots of stuff going on, man. Lots of stuff.
You were on the JS Jabber podcast
with all of like 2 hours notice. So, I feel like I missed a lot of opportunities to give shout outs to people because I announced that I was going to be on it, and then like I got like five messages back right after I closed Twitter saying, hey, don't forget to shout out this. So I feel like I missed a lot of stuff that I could have talked about
Do you want to take that out, an opportunity?
I think it's good. I think it's good. Let's do some total, you know, genuine follow up here. So first, shout out to Irish devs with two black eyes.
Woo!
if you've been punched in the face such that you have two black eyes and you're Irish and your name is Paul, you are awesome and a bad A. And yeah, so that was a fun experience to get to have a video chat over the transatlantic cabling and talk with somebody who'd been punched in the face repeatedly, such that he's a 43-year-old developer who's still getting in the boxing ring and getting his nose punched in, which is, I don't know, man. I'm getting up there in years, and that does not sound appealing to me at all.
Oh, yeah. If you walked into an office and saw a big boxing ring, that would definitely be a red flag.
Here's our cultural values is getting punched right in the face. Yeah, like you don't usually introduce developers like, hey, this is Charles. He's super smart and he can take a punch. That guy, you should just see him just getting obliterated in the ring. So and the other thing that I have a feeling we'll come back to someone else that used to work on that same application was talking about, don't forget to do a shout out to massively complex, huge Ember applications. Because there's so much to unpack there because there's so many nice little to-do MVCs and tutorials and stuff. And then stuff hits the real world and the wheels sort of come off. Mm-hmm. And then I said some stuff that may wind up having been controversial. We will see. I'm actually a little worried about it when the episode, I think it'll drop. By the time you hear this, it will already have dropped. But like, it will probably be released tomorrow as we record it. And I'm a little concerned about what some of the feedback is going to be.
Do you want to do this? Is it
I don't want to nerf
alert?
Anything. Yeah. No, I don't want to nerf anything. But I said something to the effect of that a certain percentage of developers suck at writing frameworks. Mm-hmm. And that percentage is somewhere around 100%. So some people might be mad about that. And we'll just see what happens. I'll handle, you know, on a case-by-case basis if people are really genuinely upset at that. I have friends who really believe that everybody should be writing their own frameworks, and I don't.
You know, part of me feels like it's a phase you have to go through to kind of appreciate getting behind something that that's more widely contributed to.
So building your own frameworks is like a programmer puberty.
Right. Something like
that. You're going to start noticing code in places you didn't notice it before. Layers of abstraction. You'll be attracted to layers of abstraction. You didn't feel this traction before. And now right. You're just going to notice things about, you know, things are going to be different.
Well, because, I mean, the thing is experience is born through pain, right? And if you have experience, it's like, wow, I really don't want to do that, or that's not what I want to focus on, then, you know, you can't really truly appreciate it, I think, unless you've gone through it yourself.
I've never lit my pants on fire, and I have no I have no need to go do that so that I can say, "Hey, I've experienced the pain of charring my flesh while wearing nylon pants."
Like, right. Well, maybe. But the thing is,
building a framework is not that kind of
thing. Right. It's the thing is, like, everybody needs pants.
Yeah.
So to really appreciate pants, maybe you should try, and how difficult it is, and the subtleties. Like, you might make something that appears to be a really comfortable, nice pair of pants. But because of your sewing skills, you've got, like, on the inside, you've got some seam that's, like, slicing into your leg. And you're like, oh, you know, there's a lot of subtlety to making pants that I didn't really grasp before. And that a lot comes together to make your pants.
Okay. I just hope people don't kind of, you know, I speak sometimes in overly sweeping terms, like things like train wreck
and like hyperbole is bullshit.
100%
of hyperbole is bullshit.
Hyperbole is garbage, and anyone who uses it is the worst person in the world.
There you go. Once again, you've out-Brandoned me. Out-Brandoned your Brandon.
So check it out when it comes out. It's JS Jabber. About refactoring Ember apps. We've talked about it a couple times, but they kind of grilled me on it, and were asking for specific steps. And you and I both have done a lot of homework on the subject, and have given a talk or two about it. And so it was a fun experience. Super chilled out people on the podcast panel and stuff. So I think I was really expecting to be ambushed because I called it the Angular JS podcast, because I had they're all Angular devs, and the last four episodes have been Angular core team, and then but the last two are Ember, so it's starting to even out a little bit, I think. So I don't know. It's a pretty good show. People should check it out.
All right. Well, I will definitely listen to it
when it comes out. Totally real follow up item number one,
and hopefully if it invites the controversy that we hope it will. We'll be able to follow it up again and again and again in the following months.
I really want people to – I hope people know me well enough to know that when I say stuff, I mean it. I mean it. Like, I espouse opinions so strongly for such a short period of time. Like I am so anti-build your own framework, and I do not know how I'm going to feel about it 2 months from now. Like, I could get fed up enough with frameworks that I want to build my own. So – and I think that's probably – like you said, that's a phase. That's true of everybody. And I look forward to my programmer puberty. I still am.
I really want to make a.
I'm totally a programmer tween right now. Watching iCarly.
Man, your references are not.
not landing.
Yeah,
huh?
Not landing. That's
anybody with children the age that watch those terrible, terrible shows, they will just suck your soul right out of your body. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Disney Channel shows targeted at tweens are do not approach. That stuff is toxic.
Right.
And I apologize for even bringing it up. So you did bring something up today that I thought would be interesting to kind of talk about.
Yeah, we can touch on it. I mean, it's certainly something that. Has personally affected me, I think. Have you seen Good Will Hunting? I don't know. You're pretty young, so you're
it's not your fault, Charles. It's not your fault.
Have you heard of this movie?
It's not your fault.
Yeah.
It's not your fault.
There you go.
I've seen the film.
You've seen the film. Okay, yes. So you're familiar with it. Did you like it?
I did enjoy it, actually. I did. It fed me the classic lullaby story of, you know, the person triumphing against all odds.
Right, right.
You really are special, the Luke Skywalker type, you know, mythos. So yeah, right. I like that.
And I actually like it for that. I just it occurred to me yesterday that I don't like the myth that it propagates of you know, someone being this kind of isolated genius and saving the world just, you know, through sheer virtue of, like, you know, innate talent or whatever. Because I think that really special things come out of cooperation. And I don't think that people like that, well, they might exist, but we've never heard of them. And all the people that we hold up as things that propagate that myth are actually very active members of community and very good cooperators and very good communicators.
So what would you label that myth? What would you call that?
I don't know, like the lone genius myth or something like that. Because it was certainly very strong when I was in high school. There was this, and earlier, it's like what you really want to be is someone who's very inward and studious and just all of a sudden emerges with like this fantastic thing. But that's not how the actual real world works. And if you look at, you know, kind of iconic geniuses like Einstein or Bohr, I'm using physicists here, but there's lots of others. They were actually very active members of, you know, their respective communities and, you know, relied on huge, you know, networks. And certainly they were incredible minds and in a class of their own. But the reason that they come to us today through history and through whatever is because, you know, they were very active and were able to cooperate with people very well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And
not so much actively, but I definitely held up this kind of lone creator myth that, like, if I could go to a startup or I could go into my closet and code, like, really, really, really for a long time, I could, have some sort of impact. But focusing on only the things that I was doing and not trying to be part of some greater thing or not trying to start some greater thing or, you know, contribute to some thing that was larger than myself.
That's so weird because it's so different from how I met you a couple of years ago, where your whole like MO is about pulling really great people together.
Well,
so clearly you've thoroughly changed that view.
Exactly. I don't. I've totally reevaluated that and I realized that I was kind of subconsciously like aspiring to the wrong thing or using the stories that I was told, you know, when I was a kid to try and direct the way that I worked and realize that that's actually not healthy for me and not healthy for really anybody. So in that sense, Good Will Hunting is bullshit. it's because it's the stories that we tell. The reason we tell stories to ourselves is to kind of have this collective idea of what's a good way to behave.
Right. We're telling
like what is virtue and
that's interesting. Like I never really ran down that track of the lone creator. Mm-hmm. But it was a parallel one. And it's the Luke Skywalker myth of you will be tapped on, you are special innately. You are a special snowflake and you haven't discovered it yet, but someone will tap you on the shoulder at some point and they will say, "Hey, I'm about to guide you into a new world." And that new world is going to expose all of the things that make you special. And the things that make you special are going to be the reason that you alone are able to face the greatest enemy. And there are parts of that myth that are very valuable, but it's the same deal of it's also very toxic to tell people that this is a singular hero who is above all else called upon, you know, that because at some point everybody is called upon in that way, but it's not the way that we're told in the stories. And so that myth of the genius that you're talking about in the Good Will Hunting, where he's just like able to go write these complex equations. It's a little bit of a power fantasy.
Right.
I think part of it.
It's like Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
Right. You find some magic beans, and then you don't have to do any work.
Right.
But you get all this great benefit.
It's like an omniscience fantasy or whatever, where it's like, no, you get to play the part of Will Hunting and be the genius for the duration of this film, where you're like, no, that's me. Like I always secretly knew that I was a genius. That everything that I touch, and certainly you. I'm assuming that you've found yourself having a proclivity for stuff that's typically tougher for other people. Like working with you, I can tell. there are things that are very difficult for me and I slog through that I see you just mentally just kind of cut through, like you have a very sharp sword for this stuff. And people have varying talents and varying degrees of talent. And so noticing that you have a talent for this, particularly in like Codeland, a person could be lulled into that sense of, I'm special, I'm chosen, and I don't really have to try very hard. And so as soon as you encounter that, and it does a couple things. One of them is it sets up a sense of entitlement. So because he's gifted in the film, he's entitled to the love interest. Like, that's not how it works. Like, that's not how life works at all. Relationships are brutal. And it has nothing to do with all of this stuff. He's just this innate gift and talent that he has just carries him through this entire film. Mm-hmm. And there is some conflict that's set up, and there's some stuff that he has to face his inner demons or whatever. But it's, you're right. All that stuff is so like surface level, and it totally ignores. And this is over and over again in all these myths, the Luke Skywalker myth and the Will Hunting myth, and it ignores the impact of the people around this person.
Right.
Because we want to believe that story because we're like, hey, I'm solo. I can do this on my own. I don't need thanks everybody around me for helping me tell my story in the movie that I'm the star of. Mm-hmm. And there's this really weird thing that happens at some point, hopefully in your life, where you realize, oh my gosh, everybody is the star of their own movie. And the best thing I could do with my life is help everybody else have as great a movie as possible. And so that's a pretty profound insight, and that's something that I've definitely seen you sort of do. And like from the moment I met you, that's been like what's kind of like why we wound up sort of orbiting each other a little bit. Mm-hmm. Was like this shared like sense of like we're part of a community.
Absolutely.
So what, like,
but I'm but what's funny is like innately, it's one of those things that I have to. I'm terrible at it. Like, right? I'm a terrible community member. I'm an absolutely, even though I realize how important it is, and I realize that.
But you're like famous. Famous open source guy. Awkward.
Yeah.
So yeah, that doesn't carry that much actual weight in real life. But I do see you participate in community.
Right, but I don't. Well, yeah, I do participate. Right, when I feel like called upon. But see, even when you're doing like open source work can still be very, very solo and very lonely work. And so, like the projects that I've done historically, while they might have had an impact, and they might have, while they may have been complex and had a very real contribution, they're still mostly me working on it. And so like
you climbing the mountain alone.
Right.
So the myth is upheld.
Right. Exactly. But not by, but part of it is just my poor organizational skills or my inability to rally people around something. Maybe that's not the best way to put it, but part of my problem, because like I said, I am pretty bad at it, is because I'm usually good at coding, I can focus on that and not do the other schleps, right? I mean, it's kind of a cop-out. Like I can just code and code and code and code and like let the dopamine kind of flow throughout my brain. But it's really taking the easy route. Even though people say like, oh, you're doing really hard things, I'm actually doing the easy thing for me personally. And so I constantly have to stop myself and be like, no, I really ought to be blogging. I really ought to come in here and podcast with Brandon. I really ought to be writing an email to a client. I really ought to be like talking to people on the team. I need to be communicating and stuff like that. And so that's the hard, talking with you is always a schlep, but
does life get any worse? Is it over yet? How many minutes do we have? Oh my gosh.
But
I told our assistant to come interrupt us after 15 minutes to tell me I had an urgent thing.
But realizing that you need to be in constant interaction with other people, and that you can, the things that you build, you can build even greater with more people.
True.
That's just such a key insight to have, and I think that these myths often get in the way of that and facilitate and enable you to take the easy route.
Okay, man, there's strands here I want to peel apart.
Okay, okay.
So let me try to peel these apart. One is, and I'm gonna peel it apart and set it aside, and I would love to talk about it again in the future. And that is, this people's fixation on shoring up their weaknesses instead of playing to their own strengths. where you say, hey, one of my strengths is not getting out there, waving a flag around and saying I'm part of a community. I would be happy to contribute if there were somebody there kind of helping guide me in that direction. And you were talking about literally everything that you listed as a schlep is the stuff that comes easily to me.
Right.
And the thing that says comes easily to you is a schlep from me. Sitting down and writing lines of code, I feel the blood come out of me. Like, it's still – like, I've been doing this for, like, 5 years now, and it's still so hard that I will find anything to do except that. So I will do the emails, and I will do the communication. I will do going to lunch. I will do, like, all the things that are meta, and I have to force myself to go, mm-hmm. you know what? It's time to do work. It's time to do code. And that's worked out pretty well, but just understanding that the 80% of my benefit to the universe – is probably going to be centered on the stuff that are my strengths. Right. And the 20% of shoring up my weaknesses is great, and that's valuable use of time, but you could spend the rest of your life shoring up weaknesses instead of playing to your strengths.
True.
But,
true.
Okay, strand one.
Strand right. one. But let me say also, once again, you and I cooperate in a very, very healthy and productive way, right? Because of our different strengths and weaknesses. I'm not saying you should try and always address your weaknesses first, but you have to be aware of them and be aware that they can, that avoiding the things that you might not be as good at can get you into trouble.
Yep.
And like, if I had not made conscious effort to like try and constantly like be part of, you know, a greater community, I would not have even met you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so,
so that's actually what I was going to say is kind of strand two, peeling that apart. Okay, the second strand is being aware enough of people around you to be able to say to be able to build against each other's strengths and weaknesses. And it's I would say typically you'll find a group of three people, two to three people that will shore up each other's weaknesses really, really well. A person who's really great at keeping focus on quality, a person who's really great at keeping a focus on purpose and product, like what are you doing, and another person who's focused on just straight output. And I think you can pull that off with two people, but I very, 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 very rarely meet one person who can do it. I think I've recently met one or two people that I think would count as a single person who can play all those roles, and that's like a superpower, and I would say that's an aberration.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the importance of community. The last thing I want to kind of peel off here is this idea that this like lone genius is it's the most amazing thing. Like everything that happens to that lone genius for the rest of the film is a gift. They're just people keep right. giving this person gift.
I guess
after
what it
gift
is like there
gift.
Might be lone geniuses, but there are geniuses who collaborate, and those people are just like
yeah,
you know, like.
Like where, like I don't have good examples of lone geniuses who have actually had a major impact on the world.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they've, for example, and I won't give this person's name. I know probably the most gifted programmer I know lived in Michigan and just literally, I mean, it was almost like computation and like everything surrounding software just kind of floated through him like via osmosis. Like he could just live and breathe these problems, and he understood hardware and he understood software and he understood compilers and he just literally knew the answer to everything. And I remember we were going to learn, I think it was Erlang or something, and everybody kind of came and had their little like toy implementation, and he had done some, you know, distributed like online poker system in like a week. Just crazy. But and this is certainly not like a value judgment. I guarantee that he's probably, as I said, I've interacted with a lot of developers, and just as pure, like a pure natural, like I just, this guy like stood, you know, hands and shoulders. But his contact, you know, his collaborative contact was actually very, very low. And on the other hand, it worked for him, right? He was very happy. He was also, he happened to be like a, you know, a family guy. He wasn't really interested in it, but he certainly, the thing is he didn't get any gifts from everybody like you do in this these hero myths. And now, to his credit, he didn't really want any gifts. He had no sense of entitlement. So there's a little bit, you know, there's a little bit of disconnect.
He didn't buy into it.
Right. But the myth is where, you know, you have someone of his ability, and merely because he has this talent, it's just like, you know, just gift. It's kind of like Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I hate Harry Potter.
I love Harry Potter.
I mean, I love Harry Potter, but you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Like, yeah, I love it. But
he did not work for anything.
And it is amazing. His gift was that he was lucky to have friends.
Yeah, exactly.
That would bail him out. He was brave and he was lucky. Right. And he had great friends. And the story, and the problem is, it's this Joseph Campbell Hero with a Thousand Faces thing really reinforces that. And there is, I don't have the knowledge to delve into why that myth exists. Mm-hmm. There's an evolutionary reason that it exists. It's because people were sent out into the wilderness to go gather food and bring it back to the tribe, or mm-hmm. the tribe would die. So we tell this myth about the lone hero who goes out into the woods, because that is actually how tribes survived, is you go hunt and find food or your people will die. You are mm-hmm. the seeker. You are the person whose job it is to go gather the materials for which your tribe survives. So we're programmed to respond to that. And I think understanding a lot of this programming about why our brains work the way that they do allows us to kind of subjugate those desires a little bit and go, well, that's not really how the universe works anymore. And the power is in collaboration. And that's a less less mythologically rooted idea. There aren't great myths about and this person each brought their unique gifts and they built something that none of them could do alone.
Right.
But that winds up being reality. And so, yeah, I think it's really important to note, especially I think a lot of programmers that I've met got into programming because they noticed they had a gift for logic, a gift for solving problems, for puzzles. And I've never felt less gifted in my life than I do as a programmer. Like, I was raised on the kind of – you know, I was born in the late 1970s, and so there was a real trend of everybody was telling their kids how smart they were, and so I was, you know, everything I was ever praised for was either scoring high on tests or, you know, everything that came naturally was stuff that I was praised for, and everything that required work was stuff that kind of fell by the wayside. Mm-hmm. And so I think people are tempted by those myths, the myth of the lone genius, to coast on your natural gifts and skip out on the stuff that's hard. And so I really, really like your point of so what are some specific things that you did or people can do that if they feel kind of like that myth has let them down? Like what did you do differently after you kind of like realized, hey, this is not productive for me?
So I'm trying to think like a specific example.
Yeah.
So certainly like, one. So now I was a lot younger. This is like 10 years ago. Right. Although I was still 27 at the time. The front side was originally founded to sell a JavaScript framework. This is in 2004, 2005. Ajax just come out, and we actually had a little framework where you could bind models to templates and have like live updating. And
I've never heard of it. No.
Yeah, you never heard of it. Exactly.
Live updating?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. It was called Freestyle. And it's why, it's actually why I, you know, wrote an entire like simulated DOM to unit test it and do all this stuff. And like, that's why and then when I started doing Ruby work about the same time, that's why I was using JRuby and binding the Rhino JavaScript engine to run the unit test there. So then I took that and made the Ruby racer off of that because I wanted to be running this stuff in MRI. But yeah, you never heard of it because it was, you know, just us. It was, there were three of us, and you know, a large part of it just me kind of sitting in a closet coding. And then what? We're gonna try and sell it to the rest of the world? Kind of like not even being aware of the way that the market was changing, because with, you know, when I cut my eye teeth, and I don't even know what eye teeth are. It seems kind of creepy.
I'm going to guess that's your incisors, but I could be wrong. Or your canines.
I don't know. Milk teeth Google makes it. Sense. I don't like Googling it. It takes the mystery out of it.
We'll just go along with
mystery. I hate when I ask stuff on Twitter, kind of like, you know, magnetism. How does that shit work? And then people like send you a Wikipedia article. And
literally,
it's like,
no one knows.
Yeah. Seriously. Come on. You know, that was kind of the way that frameworks were developed and sold, is you would, you know, if some company would develop it and they'd sell it for, you know, some developer license or something like that. Whereas that's really, we were trying to start at the very tail end in which that business model was like collapsing. And if I'd actually pulled my head out of my ass for 5 minutes and like talked to people, I would have realized that like I might have been doing incredible work for the time, but it did not matter because it was in the wrong direction. It was for the wrong audience, and the economic situation just was not receptive to that business model at the time. And so it failed miserably, not because of technology. And I came out, that was a very, very formative experience because I realized like if I'm going to have my own business, if I'm going to do all this stuff, I cannot just be a developer. Like, I need to not think like a developer. And it helps so much to get outside of your own head, to get perspective. And so the things that you're good at can be very dangerous to perspective.
That's really interesting. I think I'm gonna ponder on that because I come from such an opposite approach that I let myself get really frustrated with my either perceived limitations or actual limitations on the technical side, not coming from that background and both being newer to it and not possessing, it's the weirdest thing, like being told all while I was growing up that I was gifted at certain things and then coming into programming and realizing I may not have a special gift for this. Like it's something that I enjoy and it's something that I bring a certain perspective to, but it's not my gift. And it's amazing. It's very humbling and not leaning too hard on my strengths. Like play to those for impact, but not leaning too hard for fear of loss of perspective. So that's interesting to think about. So yeah, all right. Well, let's bury that myth.
Yeah.
So instead, it's the there's the myth of the lone genius, mm-hmm. And then the reality of the collaborative superpower.
Right. Exactly. The myth of the lone genius, the myth of the entitled hero.
Yeah.
But the real power of collaboration.
Yeah.
And community.
All right. Well, I think that's good enough to leave on for the week.
All right.
So I'm ready. Let's do this. Let's have an awesome week.
All right,
everybody,
sweet.
For listening.
All right.
Okay.
Take it easy, y'all.
See y'all later.
All right. Bye.